This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. This week's episode was recorded on February 13th, 2016. On this week's episode, Nick White and Jeff Perry join me, Mike Rappin, in a very roundabout discussion about social media and comic book creators. We drift and go on for a bit, but Jeff managed to wrap things up pretty nicely. And now, this week's episode. This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I am your host, Mike Rappin, editor-in-chief for Destroy the Cyborg. With me this week, as usual, are two fantastic human beings who I enjoy talking to about comic books and everything in the realm of comics and the world, really. Pretty much, I'll talk to these guys about anything. Nick White.
Hey.
And Jeff Perry.
Hello.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Nick. How have comic books been? How have you guys been?
Comics have been good. It's been a little while since I've been on, but I've been really enjoying myself recently, and I guess we'll go ahead. But Nick, how have you been?
Pretty good. Been busy, but still found some time here and there to get some reading done. Not as much as I've wanted to. This is sort of the hypochondriac hardcore comic book dilemma. This time of year, my hands start getting super chapped. And as Mike says, you know, turn the page, wash your hands, turn the page, wash your hands. Well, this time of year, washing your hands a lot creates a problem. And so now my hands are super dry. And then it's like, do I want to try to read my comics and potentially, like, bleed all over them? Which, that does not add to the value. I called CGC. They were worried for me, actually. They were like, what do you think this is? Is this like the Kiss record where you all sort of like pour your blood into it? And that's a real thing, by the way. Yeah, well, it was Kiss's comic books. They added their blood into the red ink.
Oh, and so, I remember that. This? Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
I think Paul, like, this is definitely like right into Paul's wheelhouse of stuff. But yeah, so I've been reading comics. Like, if you want to talk about like another reason to read digital on occasion, like winter and chapped hands and whatnot, that would be one of them. So yeah,
you don't even need hands to read digital. You can just use your nose to swipe over.
Yeah.
Get the grease from your face all on your iPad or whatever tablet you're reading.
Or yeah. Your foot.
It's terrible because I was telling my mom about this a couple days ago, and I was like, "This is so bad." And of course, like, she's already thinks this is super ridiculous. And she's like, "Well, why don't you just wear gloves and like read your comic?" And I just rolled my eyes, and I'm like, "I'm not gonna wear gloves, Mom. Please."
And then you sat back and you thought, you're like, maybe that's actually not a bad idea.
Cue me with a huge pair of mittens, like flailing to turn the page and just bending it like eight different ways.
I was thinking latex gloves or something.
Yeah.
Even then, more sciencey.
You gotta worry about the just dust. One sequin glove.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Sorry for that spike, Xander.
Or one of those white gloves that you can just wipe the dust off with.
Yeah.
If the glove fits, you must read comics. Sorry.
Oh, we are getting into weird referential territory. Let's move on talk about what we read in the past week. So, Jeff, let's start with you. What did you read recently?
I had a back catalog of stuff that I wanted to read. So I started to dive into it not too long ago. But there's three different books I wanted to sort of talk about. Is I finally picked up Plutona and read 1-3. That book is not what I was expecting, but I'm still enjoying it.
Could you elaborate a little bit more on that? I mean, only because I read the first issue and I was like, maybe this isn't for me. But what
See,
else?
That's what I heard too. I'm very curious.
I was expecting it to be more aliens and more, and I was expecting it to be more sci-fi from the get-go. And the whole first issue was just like, hey, there are these kids. Also, there's this thing. And then that's how the first book ended. And then, like, it sort of kept going like that, but it just wasn't what I was expecting. It's not bad. I still enjoy it. I still think that it's a really good book. But it just wasn't what I was expecting. I mean, that's basically it. I went in, going in and thinking it was this, it was one way, and then it wasn't that at all, you know. And
okay.
How much Jeff Lemire have you read, Jeff? Because
not much, to be totally honest.
Okay.
Mainly because I'm not a giant fan of his. Not that.
Okay.
Don't kill me.
No,
that's okay.
I'm just saying,
okay.
Like he's very much and I'm sure you know this to some extent, but he's very much like character development over plot. So okay. If it's just people sitting around and talking, that's very, very, very par for the course for him.
Right. And, you know, I get that. And I'm not opposed to Jeff Lemire. I don't think he's my bag. But somebody that is my bag, segue, is Brian K. Vaughan. Brian K. Vaughan, as you know, does Paper Girls. And I picked that issue, those issues up and read 1 through 5 recently off on that too. And man, is this book weird. And like Jeff Lemire is for you, Nick, Brian K. Vaughan, I kind of understand his style and I enjoy his storytelling. And I don't know. I loved Saga. It was one of the first comics I actually read, when I started reading comics, and I fell in love with it. And then I started picking up, We Stand on Guard. I love that book. And so Brian K. Vaughan. Brian K. Vaughan is, you know, he's got a real soft spot for me. Or I have a real soft anyway. So Paper Girls.
I was going to say, what sort of interactions have you been having with Brian K. Vaughan?
You know, the relationship that Brian and I have.
Ladies and gentlemen.
The relationship that Bri, and I have is, you know, it's a really special relationship, and I don't think that he really wants me to go public with it. Jesus. And, you know, it's our private lives. And anyway, Paper Girls is a weird book. It was another thing where I'm just like, oh, it's about these paper girls. And I went in almost totally blind because I kind of wanted to, because I hadn't really done that before with any of his books. Because when I read Saga, Mike was the one that sort of turned me to it. And then that being said, like, you can go into a Brian K. Vaughan book and have the whole synopsis ruined for you, and you still don't know what the fuck is going on.
Right. So, well, especially with this book, especially with Paper Girls.
It's so weird.
I just sort of imagined Jeff, like, literally going in, like, blind with a blindfold into his comic book shop to try to find Paper Girls and just knocking all of the shelves over. It was it was really amusing in my head. So everyone think of that.
Right. Yeah, now. I had my shades on and the white stick, the collapsible one. So, you know, it makes it more portable. Yeah.
Whoa. We were not about to make fun of blind people on this.
I thought you were going to make a segue into Daredevil, actually.
Oh, God damn it.
You weren't? You were just going to make fun of blind people and not even segue.
That was going to be the perfect segue. God, I hate myself. Oh,
Much as those blind people do.
Can we just tell... Can we just tell
Zaner,
the editor, to just sort of cut this to where it looks like I'm perfectly segueing to the third?
No, this is gold right now.
This is too late.
Anyway, speaking of blind people, I read, and this is going to surprise both of you, because you both know I don't like the big two. I'm an Image person. I like mainly Image, but like I like sort of the indie comics and the nothing big two. I read Daredevil. And
the new run with Charles Soule and
Ron Garney, is it? Or Rob Garney?
I believe so, yeah. And so
Garney,
I picked up Daredevil, and I picked it up actually because I was listening, I forget which episode it was, but Mike was basically, I believe it was Mike or somebody, was talking about how great Daredevil number one was. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. And then I told Mike about it, and he goes, if you don't like that book, I will legitimately refund your money for it. I go, okay. And Mike, did I ever ask for your money?
No, I mean, honestly, I haven't had anyone read a book and ask for their money back yet, so I think I'm doing pretty well. I don't know what the record is, but I think it's more than 3.
So you're batting 1,000, huh? Let's see if we can fix that later.
Don't do sports analogies with Mike. Don't.
But yeah, I picked that up. I picked up number 2, and I picked up number 3, and we kind of talked before the show. You guys didn't like 3. I enjoy it, mainly because I've never read any Daredevil books. I'm not familiar with the Daredevil character outside from the horrible Ben Affleck flick that I saw as a kid.
Yeah. Have you not watched the show?
No. No, I haven't.
Okay. Oh, that is so weird. I sort of figured that was your segue.
No, I haven't read this. I haven't watched it yet.
You're a weird one, Jeff.
I am. Yeah. I made fun of blind people. What kind of normal person would do that?
Well, I was going to bring that up, but I figured at this point it was a moot point.
Yeah, you know. Anyway, so, but yeah, I liked it. I actually kind of like I really like how... he's a prosecutor now instead of a defense attorney, like he's always been, which sort of like I when I first sort of read that and first sort of saw it, I thought that oh, okay, they're going a totally more nitty-gritty direction and trying to go dark with it and trying to... Because, like, the very first interaction you see him as a lawyer in issue one was basically him being like, this isn't about me saving you. This isn't about me helping you. This is about me putting the bad guy away. I'm not here to save and defend people anymore. I'm here to put the bad guys away, either as a lawyer or as Daredevil. I'm going to try and find my ways to do it. And it was really interesting because, like, I understand the Daredevil character enough to where I'm like, oh, he's a prosecutor now? That's weird. And so that happened, and then Ten Fingers is the villain, and I'm not sure. I mean, like I said, I've never really dealt with anything Daredevil-ish outside from the Ben Affleck flick, which we all know isn't really good startup material.
Yeah. We won't start on that because I honestly think it is not as bad as everyone says.
We're not going to do that right now. Just continue, Jeff.
Yeah. Believe me, I'm not saying that's a good movie by any stretch of the imagination, but still.
Anyway, so I don't know if Ten Fingers is an original villain that just got brought in, or if he's a recurring character, kind of like the Joker is to Batman. But, like, you know, I don't know. I know very little about it, but I kind of like it because it's this weird cultish kind of thing, and I like that kind of weirdness to it, and then. Issue three, I don't know if we want to really dive in and do spoilers, but it took a turn that I guess kind of rubbed you guys the wrong way, and I kind of actually liked it.
Yeah, well, I actually haven't read it. I was merely saying, like, most people I know who were reading Daredevil when it started, by this point, most of them are not super happy with where it's gone.
Okay.
I read number three, and I realized that I was going to give it the arc, and maybe I still will, but number three just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I'll probably still read it, like I said, through number six or whatever the first arc ends, but I'm not too pleased with it right now.
It seems really weird. It almost seems like it's messing with the dynamic, because at least with old Daredevil, you know, he would be forced to have to defend someone who was probably a big douchebag to begin with, and then of course he would get even when he put on the, I was going to say, you know, cape and whatnot, but obviously there's no cape involved.
Usually Daredevil's shtick was, you know, he would be defense attorney for someone who was the underdog. He always was defending the underdog against like a big corporation or against someone that was certainly going to win. And someone he would somehow get them out of the problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, but you're actually digging this book, is what you're saying.
I am, yes. But I'm more interested in what you have to say as to what put you off on it. And because I kind of want to know, because as somebody that knows Daredevil more than I do, which the bar is like at the floor for you to really know more about Daredevil than I do. But with that said, like, I would love your opinion as to what about it rubbed you the wrong way.
Jeff is very politely forcing you to actually put up your dukes and.
I don't want to go on and on forever, but my biggest gripe, I think, was the fact that everything had to be tied back to the hand, and that's like Daredevil's go-to villain is this seemingly endless number of magic ninjas, and I really wanted Ten Fingers to be more than just a relation to the hand. I mean, like, that's kind of spoilery in a way, but I didn't want the hand to be involved.
Why do they call him Ten Fingers?
Magic. Yeah. Magic is kind of... Yeah. That's... What? There's a whole... I don't want to spoil the whole thing, but there's a whole deal with magic. And okay. So... And that's, like, Daredevil shtick. Like, there's always been, like, this ancient
mysticism.
Magic. Yeah. And so... That's, I don't know, it just kind of, I was just hoping for a little bit more. Other than that, the story is actually really interesting. His whole interaction with Blindspot is great. I like seeing Daredevil fail in a way as a prosecutor. And some things are really cool. I mean, the twist at the end of three was actually pretty well done. But I don't know, I'm not as excited about it as I was after issue number one, I guess.
Yeah, I mean... I don't know. I'm interested to sort of see where it goes. And I mean, maybe it's because I have fresh eyes and I don't have anything to sort of
and
go back.
And don't let my opinion sway you. I mean, if you like it, there's nothing wrong with that. So
no, I know.
Don't.
I get that.
Don't take my word as law.
Yeah, I do enjoy your opinion, Mike, but I mean, I wouldn't put yourself that high. I mean, you're not a god to me.
Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. Nick, what did you read this past week?
Well, like I said, not as much as I would have liked to, but it was a lot of more indie stuff, more alternative flair, I know. But DC keeps axing my books, and it sounds like as we get closer and closer to Rebirth, I've already heard that Batman Superman is going to go down the tubes. I've heard Dr. Fate is going to meet a similar, well, never mind.
Fate, that's the word.
Yeah. And
demise?
Demise, that's the word I was going for. But I read Art Ops 4. That book still continues to be amazing. If you're not reading it, I would definitely say at least wait for the trade. I know Mike Allred's art is polarizing to some people, to which I say, what is wrong with you? You're a terrible, terrible human being if you don't like his art. Art is not subjective true. When it comes to Mark Allred. Mike Allred.
Yeah.
End of story. I read Twilight Children number 4, the concluding volume, which was beautiful and wonderful, and I didn't quite 100% understand it. I had to reread the issue twice, still didn't understand it, then realized I would have to find 1 through 3 and said, fuck it, the trade must be coming out soon, right? I'm sure as a collected volume, I bet it makes more sense, and I'm sure in the hands of a more intelligent being than I, it will all come together much more beautifully. But my big focus was two Tom King books, Omega Men 8 and Sheriff of Baghdad 3, two mm-hmm. very, very different series. Obviously, we've talked about Omega Men a whole bunch on this podcast, so there's not much more that needs to be said other than the fact that as we're on 8... and I don't really know if they've 100% said this will end at 12 or not. In a weird, bizarre way, I almost sort of feel or hope that it ends at 12, because I think this thing is so meticulously paced and so wonderfully, carefully calculated, and not in a way that's like super, super intricate Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy plot, you know, messiness. But just the pacing is just perfect, that I almost hope it ends at 12 exactly, because I think beyond that we might see things that are not going to be as, you know, wonderful. And then Sheriff of Baghdad, holy cow.
What is this book? I've actually never heard of it.
Okay, so it was going to be called Sheriff of Babylon, but then they found out that apparently they couldn't use that name. It was already copywritten, and it's based on Tom King's actual experiences as a counter, and I think I've got this all right, as a counterterrorism, CIA officer, of course it would be CIA, it's international, in Iraq, I believe.
Okay.
And so he knows what he's writing about. And like, we all have those comics that when you sit down to read it, like, they're the ones you just breeze through. And then there are the ones that you have to really slowly read because you are taking in a lot of information. And right. It's not boring information, mind you, but it's a lot of stuff you know so little about. And it's so interesting. And they say, write what you know. And it's clear that Tom King knows his stuff. Like, I've read interviews and they send him over there and it wasn't just, you know, sit behind a desk and whatever and, you know, hit this piece of paper with the stamp and then, you know, mm-hmm. staple a couple sheets and put a paperclip on it. Like, he was over there with guns. And it's an interesting drama that has a lot to do with, like, right now, I think he's the main character who's an American, is like trying to figure out this one guy that he was, this one Iraqi guy that he was training ended up dead, and he's trying to figure out how that happened, and he's like interviewing all of the people that trained with this person, and of course all of them, like, they trained with this guy for months, and yet when he goes to interview them, they all deny that they, like, they don't even know who he is. So okay. It's sort of that code of silence stuff going on. And Mitch Gerads, or Gerads, G-E-R-A-D-S, the artwork is unbelievable. King says this guy was picked because he's, like, really, really good at, like, drawing people, but he's also really, really great at, like, all of the different, like, military, industrial, like, devices and tanks and all of the technical stuff. And, of course, It's got Jean-Paul Leon covers. And anytime you get your hands on Jean-Paul Leon art, it's fantastic. And you should never pass that up. So, Tom King, busy, busy man. I think both books are probably going to end within the year. I think Sheriff got extended from 6 to 12 issues. But the rumor is that I think you're going to see his stuff wrap up because, as the rumor goes, he may be the new writer of the bi-monthly Batman book following Rebirth.
Right. Yowza. Well, yes. This who publishes Sheriff of Baghdad?
Sheriff is Vertigo, which is exactly what you need, because the sort of violence that goes on in this book, it is very, how should I put it? It's very true to the news reports you've heard, and some of which you've had the unfortunate circumstance of seeing on the news. It is some pretty dark, graphic stuff, and the like. It's not gratuitous. You were seeing what went down and is going down, to you know, for that matter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
don't finish your night with that book. Do not make that the last thing you read before you go to bed.
I see. Yeah, well, for me this week, I actually didn't have a chance to sit down and read too much. I did manage to nab some stuff on Wednesday, and so all I read were comics that came out this past Wednesday. I read All New Wolverine number 5, which continues to be a fantastic Wolverine story that stars Laura Kinney, aka X-23. This book is incredible, and it's got just the right amount of flair and tie into the Marvel Universe to make maybe a lot of people really interested in this book. Like, honestly, this is a really, really good, like, action story, and X-23 is the most badass character. I also read Constantine the Hellblazer number 9, and I actually just read this and my next pick today, and Constantine, I'm not even going to say anything else. You've heard me say this a million times. This book is perfect. I love it. And Riley Rossmo actually did all the art on this issue, unlike previous issues where he is credited with like finishes. Layouts or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that was a nice treat. You actually saw a lot of his heavy-handed work. And the villain that they have in this book is the like most flamboyant, like ridiculous visualization of a demon that you've ever seen. Not in like horrible horror type of ways, but in like a prim and proper like 1800s nobleman. And yet he is the second most powerful demon in hell, so there's that. And anyways, but the one pick that I actually read this afternoon that I kind of want to talk about a little more was Jonesy number 1, which was a book that I've been seeing hype for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And Sam Humphries is, I think, like a fan favorite among a lot of indie creators.
Right.
And I just follow a lot of people that really like his stuff, but I've been seeing this book being promoted like crazy.
This
so
is
with
Boom,
Sam,
right?
And this is it's a Boom book with art by Caitlin Rose Boyle.
Okay.
Her art looks very similar to Brian Lee O'Malley's, or maybe I've just got Scott Pilgrim on the mind recently. But it's like the same vein of that, where it's very childish looking and simple, but not to say that it's not detailed in any way. It just has like a cartoony style to it. And that's really cool. And I did not think I was going to like this book. But reading it today, it feels like a very, very strong, well-crafted, all-ages book that reminds me of, like, Steven Universe in a way, where there are, like, adult themes going on, but there are also very fun, kind of goofy teenage storylines happening.
Like a Pixar movie.
Yeah, and I would probably recommend this to anyone who is a teenager and wants to get into comic books, because it's goofy, and it feels like I'm 16 again when I'm reading this book. And Jonesy, the character, is like really out there and wild, and she supposedly has this magic power. And this book has just a lot of heartwarming moments that I did not see myself actually liking this book, and yet at the end I came away from it enjoying it. So I might see through the rest of the series, which is, it's going to be 4 issues long, and it was actually just a lot of fun. And I don't know why I had this notion in my head that I wasn't going to like it. And there was just a lot of hype behind it, so I just assumed it was going to be bad, or maybe I just wasn't a fan of Citizen Jack that Sam Humphries had written pretty recently, and I think that's on issue number 4, and I wasn't a big fan of that book, so I just was like, I don't know, poo-pooing over this new one. I was totally wrong.
This is the Star-Lord guy, right?
I believe he's writing
Legendary Star-Lord?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, so Sam Humphries, I don't know, he's got a bad rap in my head, and I don't understand that. But Jonesy number 1 was actually really fun and cute. So you should, if you didn't pick that book up, maybe give it a try. If it goes on sale, or maybe in like 2 weeks, I think Boom usually discounts their books down to $2 on Comixology. Maybe grab it if you've got you want one more book some week. It's a lot of fun. It's like a nice little book to kind of give you a little smirk after you've read all your awful action-packed horror stories.
After that, you've are like read the big two Sheriff books. Sheriff of Baghdad.
yeah. It's a nice palate cleanser in a way.
So this is one you can go to sleep with, right?
Yeah. Like, honestly, I finished number 1 thinking, like, that's the end? I really, like, was excited for more of this story. So I'm going to have to keep reading it, I guess. Shucks. A good comic book that I found. Ugh.
It's awful when that happens.
Yeah.
No, that's great that it's all ages, because, like, recently when I find that when they apply that all ages sort of, you know, label, what it tends to mean sometimes is, well, it's safe for kids, and kids might like it. And it's like, that's not what all ages means. That's not what it means.
Yeah.
It means I have to like it, too. I mean, if it's great for kids, say it's great for kids. Don't just slap all ages if you mean, well, kids will probably like it, too. Or, I mean, it's more for kids. Anyway.
Yeah, and this book definitely could appeal to anyone who is, you know, in, like, a teenager up through a full-grown-ass human being like myself, I guess.
Does it have any sort of a tie-in with a show or anything like that, or is this completely unassociated with any media?
Having done no research, I want to say, I'm going to say no. It just happens
between the three of us, it seems like nobody...
Yeah, I hadn't heard of anything else, so it's a fun little book. But
okay.
I could go on and on about, you know, that over and over and keep saying that it's pretty good and you should check it out. But let's move on to what we are actually excited for this upcoming week. Comic books come out on the 17th, February 17th. So, Jeff, what are you looking forward to this week?
This one was actually kind of a hard one. I usually have a couple of books that I'm interested in that are coming out, but there wasn't much in my pull list that was really coming out this week. So I actually kind of started digging and seeing if there's something new that I could either try or something that I've been wanting to read or, you know, whatever. And I fell into Snowfall number one by Joe Harris and Martin Morazzo. And I am not familiar with either of these two very well. But from what I can tell from the synopsis and the art style that I've seen from Martin Morazzo, it looks like it's going to be a really cool book. And not only that, but it's an oversized 32-page book. And it's this, like, it looks like this, like, post-apocalyptic kind of, like, thing where, you know, snow is no longer falling and it's a climate problem and you know, there's a society where they sort of go into these own clans and everything. It looks, and there's, like, this overseeing corporation and the synopsis just sort of gives itself. It's like, okay, I'm going to have to shell out my money for this because it looks super good because I mean, everything that I like about this book is everything I like about most of my kind of stories, is that it's dystopian or post-apocalyptic or, you know, that kind of thing. I'm into that kind of genre, if you could call it that. And this one,
I was going to say, you're in luck these days.
I know.
These days,
it's
Jeff,
a heyday.
It's the new vampire or the new zombie.
I know. And I'm enjoying it for the most part. And
people are genuinely upset these days if 90% of the, you know, world's population is, you know, still kicking.
I want people. I want to go
that
in with,
people
with just mass murder. I want to go in with as many dead people as I can.
Oh, because God. That's when...
Xander, are you getting this quote? Are
you getting this? I want to be on the news. I want to be on the news with this.
I'm actually pretty excited for this book, too. I know Nick's been hyping it for a little while to me. And this is Joe Harris, the other book that I know him for is actually The Great Pacific, which is a very similar environmental-oriented type of story about this millionaire, billionaire, like, heir to some giant company, like, that does oil industry, or is in the oil industry or something like that. He just up and disappears and goes and lives on an island made of the world's trash out in the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
And I have the first two trades. I read the first half of the first trade, and I've been meaning to get back to it. But nonetheless, I've heard really good things. So I'm sure that this new one is probably going to be fantastic.
He also has been writing the X-Files comic for IDW recently.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah, and this looks good. Like, the whole idea that he's sort of like this eco... Like, the main characters, I think they call him, like, the White Wizard, which, actually, that doesn't sound good when you think about that. he's sort of
you
like...
You guys thought that was bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's, like, an eco-terrorist, because the government is now trying to crack down on, like, weather conditions or something. It looks good. It sounds good. I mean, this is sort of the fresh idea from Image that I like to see these days. So...
Yeah. Nick, what are you excited for this week?
Well, it was actually going to be Snowfall number one for me, but for me, it's actually Imperium number 13, and it's not for the conventional reasons that you would genuinely find someone having something be their pick of the week. For me, Imperium is the first Valiant book that I think, I know, this is a big deal, stands the chance of having me actually end the book before either A, it's a miniseries and it naturally wraps, or B, it hits the 25-issue mark or whatever, and Valiant, shutters the book anyway. So this is the first one I think that's truly been on the fence for me. I wasn't ever super crazy about Harbinger, which of course is where Imperium tends to get its roots, as the main villain of Harbinger becomes sort of the main protagonist of Imperium, Toyo Harada. But the last arc for me was really, really weak. That's not knocking Joshua Dysart. Normally, this guy is totally solid. But as I sort of look at the pattern of the arcs, it's sort of like, oh, Toyo Harada has another enemy, which, understandably, he has a lot of enemies. Like, the entire world is attempting to thwart his, basically his attempt to rule the world, or create his paradise, or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. So this issue is the beginning of the next arc, and I'm probably going to give it one or two issues to sort of turn things around. Otherwise, I am probably going to cancel it. I like that they're bringing in the hardcore, which I won't get into who they are, but it's a cool group of guys that we haven't seen that much of. They have, like, these bio whatever implants in their brain, and it allows them to, like, dial in to different powers, but they can only use one power at a time, and it takes time for them to transition between one power and the next. So they sort of train as a squad, where one might like use a shield ability while the other one uses like a psychic blast. Anyway, you get the idea. It's kind of neat. They're bringing them in, which they're drawing me in when I thought I was out. And Livewire is going to be a part of it, and Livewire is such a cool character. It's a African-American female protagonist superhero. She was actually the leader of Unity for a while. Mm-hmm. She's got these great, like, I guess you would call them, like, I don't know. She's able to, like connect with machines on, like, a whatever. I don't remember what that power is called, but it's that whole...
It's like Technomancer, you know, kind of, in a
yeah,
way.
Yeah, 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 exactly. That sort of stuff. So we'll see. It could be the beginning of the end for this book, but because unfortunately previews for the upcoming month look really, really hefty, so cuts are going to have to be made. This one may be on the fence. So Imperium number 13.
Gotcha.
What about you, Mike?
So my pick for this week is Archie number 6, because Archie is fan-fucking-tastic. If you're not reading Archie, I'm sorry, but I love this book. This is just like Jonesy in a way, where it's a nice palate cleanser. Everything's happy-go-lucky. And the problems and the tribulations of all of these characters are just so easy to understand. You know, they're relationship oriented, they're like community oriented. Oh, problems with the high school, oh, the principal's a jerk, you know, like things that you would imagine teenagers having a real problem with in their day to day life. We've got our actual new solid ongoing artist, Veronica Fish, who's starting this month. I think she did a cover, or she's done covers for the books, but Annie Wu, or who, I think she did the issue, last month's issue as well.
Yes, she did five. Yeah,
so now to know that she's going to be the regular artist, I'm totally okay with it. I really, really enjoyed her art. Having Fiona Staples start the series with an issue, then followed by an issue of Annie Wu, and then moving to Veronica Fish. Like, it's been an all-star cast of artists so far, and Mark Waid has been nailing this book in the best ways possible, making me actually love the Archie universe and wanting to get to know all of these characters. And so I'm hooked on this and Jughead, which are coming out, you know, back to back. And I'm digging this book. Like, I haven't read Jughead number 4, which came out last week, I believe. So I don't know how these two books really line up. They haven't really had any parallelisms yet, but I'm always trying to make sure that I'm up to date on both of them before I read the next subsequent issue. So this book is great. I can't say anything more than that. And if you haven't read it, I would say look for the first arc, or look for the first trade to come out pretty soon, I'm guessing, and probably in the next month or two. And I'm sure it'll either contain issues 1 through 4, maybe 5. I think 5 started the new arc, so I can't remember completely.
I was going to say, I mean, it probably would be based around that whole lipstick incident arc, so I don't know.
Yeah. And that was the conclusion of number 4, where we actually found out what the lipstick incident was.
Yeah.
If you need a happy palate cleanser type of book, I think Archie is the best one you can get. I mean, Jonesy was good. I know I keep wrapping it back to that, but Archie is consistently, like, assured fantastic comic books. And that's all I'm going to say about it. So
I really like that it's not afraid to tackle some of the more, I guess, I don't know if you want to call them controversial, but sort of present social issues that kids these days tend to face, or I mean, kids have tended
kids
to face.
Kids these days, yeah.
Kids these days, you know, get off my lawn. Have had to face for, you know, quite a while, but it's not too heavy-handed, and I like that. I think this book was heavy-handed about that stuff, or like, this is how things should be, or this is how you should react to this, or whatever, then maybe I wouldn't like it as much, but it's just got a little bit of canon, and it's got a little bit of continuity. It's not completely driven by it, but there's enough there to keep things really going, and it's introducing new characters all the time.
Yeah.
And it's pacing them out well enough that if you know nothing about Archie, which up to this point, my greatest Archie knowledge was Afterlife with Archie. Was with Archie,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That was basically my best introduction to the series, so they're not overwhelming you with 18 million people, which there are.
Yeah, and I was the exact same way. Afterlife with Archie was my first introduction, and I figured I'd try this new one, and I did not expect myself to get hooked, yada, yada, yada. Here we are, and I am, like, I am championing for this book. That's what I'm trying to say. So, yeah, I can't recommend this enough, so you should definitely be reading this book. I'll say that a million times over and over. A few weeks back, we were talking, I can't remember what episode it was, but it's kind of started this topic of social network expectations when it comes to comic book creators that maybe some of us have, some of us don't. But it was this idea of when you're, you know, talking about a comic online, or you respond to a creator, or you do anything that mentions a comic book and a creator somehow starts to interact with you, is there this, like, my question for you guys today is there this, like, social contract between you and a comic book creator where when they respond to you, or when you respond to them, that they should talk back, or that they should, I don't know, be positive or negative or something about the way that you're talking about something that they created? And I wanted to see what you guys thought about that, simply because I've had experiences with, in the past, the quote-unquote Kieran Gillen incident that seems to be this big mythological thing that only matters to me at this point. As well as, you know, we've, you know, tweeted about things. I've mentioned Tom Scioli on a couple tweets that I've made for this show, for Destroy the Cyborg. And he's, like, retweeted it or thumbs up it or something like that. And I want to see what you guys actually have had an experience. I've asked, like, three questions now. So what are your interactions, or what's your experience with, you know, dealing with, talking with comic book creators, or just people in general online that are of some sort of notoriety?
Well, for starters, I do think there is sort of like an unwritten playbook, or whatever you want to call it, of etiquette for these people. I'm not saying it's fair, I'm not saying it's right, but generally speaking, it seems like there's an unwritten idea that, first off, if anybody tweets at you about your book, you need to respond to each and every person. And on top of that, for the most part, well, I mean, as ridiculous as it sounds, I think there are people out there that, like, when they don't get a response back from Dan Slott or whatever, they're, like, deeply and, you know, inextricably, you know, offended.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, it's the idea that you have to reply to these people. But not only that, but you also have to be polite and not stir up any controversy. Probably don't disagree with them, and if you disagree with them, not too strongly.
Mm-hmm.
You get the idea. Just generally, unfortunately, just basically be a yes man of sorts, because if you don't, maybe these people won't read your book, or they're gonna, you know, retweet this to all of the similar minded people or whatnot. It's not fair, but it's true. It reminds me, actually, I just saw a tweet, I think it was Dan Slott today, who wrote,
Dan Slott
tweeted
being
something.
He's the author of Amazing Spider-Man right now, and Silver Surfer, just for anyone who may be asking that question.
Right, and I'm glad you said that, because I did not know which Spider-Man book. He writes one of those Spider-Mans, that's all I know. And he wrote something like, joking or saying mean things or whatever is, like, funny if you're, like, family or like a friend or whatever, but like he said if I don't know you and the first thing you tweet to me is something like nasty or some sort of an attack, like, that's it, bye folks. And I was like, yes,
yeah,
that's the way it needs to be, because I think a lot of these people are running scared of this idea that they have to be nice and polite and just not ruffle any feathers at all. And that's stupid.
Yeah, I mean, these creators aren't running for office. They're not politicians. They don't have to be somebody that sort of pleases everybody. And I, personally, I don't think that they have a single shred of obligation to even really respond to the backlash that they might get, or even the praise that they might get. They don't have to really respond. This is just my personal opinion, but I don't think that, like, creators that sort of... I just don't understand why the minute that Facebook and Twitter blew up, any sort of creator has to be on Twitter, has to be on social media in order for them to, you know, be considered a true artist. If they make great content but they don't socialize with people, they don't sort of interact with somebody, then they're apparently obsolete now. Like, I don't remember that ever being a thing, you know, back in the day, you know, and I don't think that was ever a problem in, you know, the 80s and 90s, even when comics were around. And granted, they weren't nearly as mainstream as they are now, but the only thing that these creators really had to communicate with their readers were the back pages of the comics and just sort of responding to letters that they might have gotten or whatever. And they still do that now, but apparently that's not enough anymore. Where each issue they talk and they write a couple of pages to their readers and answer any questions or whatever. And apparently that's not enough. They also had to have this part-time job on Twitter and Tumblr to sort of post things and try and stay relevant. Even while they're making these books. And, you know, we've talked about it before, but, like, there are some creators that, and especially artists and anybody that is sort of making the comic look is, you know, writers are sort of a different story, but, like, artists are so backed up with stuff they have to do that some of them, like, literally go crazy and they just don't know, they can't handle it, so they have to, like, drop books and everything. And on top of that, you throw Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, all that stuff on their plate. I don't know how they have hair anymore, because I would rip mine out at that point.
Yeah.
Because I mean, personally, I don't think that they need to respond to everybody, or, you know, and I don't think that, you know, anybody's really expecting them to respond, especially if they're, you know, if they have thousands of followers that are very active. And we all know most comic book readers are active in some sort of way with their favorite creators, or their least favorite creators, depending on what kind of a person they are. So,
yeah, I think, but at the same time, there is this need to have the, you know, a Twitter or a Tumblr or something like that to have a way to spread your content. So, you know, I was saying before, this Jonesy book that I read this week, you know, there was so much hype on it on Twitter that I felt like it was overwhelming, because so many people were retweeting things. Or, you know, if you follow someone like Gail Simone, for instance, she retweets so many people. Like, her timeline is busy and she is constantly interacting with fans and other creators. And if you follow, you know, the right set of creators, you'll see a big, long conversations go back and forth. For instance, David Aja and Annie Wu and Kieran Gillen, Jamie McKelvey, Matt Fraction, Kelly Sue DeConnick, you can watch entire conversations happen in a public public area such as Twitter, because they're all, you know, up at 10 o'clock at night Eastern Standard Time and talking. I mean, maybe, you know, some people live on the West Coast, but nonetheless, like, these people are all constantly interacting. And then a fan jumps in and either the fan gets response or, like, a response, or they get nothing, but you still see them in these feeds trying to get into that conversation because it's so easy to just jump
weird.
Sometimes it's weird, sometimes it's not, and it's like there seems to be this notion that there is a, like, an obligation. At least that's what I feel like, where people jump in, they're like, my comment is just as valid as this other creator. And I'm not to try to put these people up on a pedestal, but, like, maybe they're just, you know, chatting among friends, and then you jump in as a stranger at a party, and it's like, okay, well, we don't really know you, we don't know the context of why you're jumping into the conversation. And so maybe it's a little weird for them to not respond, but some people will get offended by that and saying, oh shit, you know, I will just quote Kieran Gillen here, because I'll use Kieran Gillen because, you know, this is the one time that this actually happened to me was, you know, you mention a creator offhand and then they jump into your conversation like, hey man, don't talk shit about me right now, please. And it's so funny because I think that they selectively choose when they jump into a conversation, because they don't want to cause, like, negative press. They don't want to have an article show up on Bleeding Cool, which is essentially the comic books world of TMZ, saying, oh, you know, you know, Kieran Gillen responds to a fan and, you know, rips their head off. And it's like, I don't know. Like, is, for one, your question, is that even news? And two, like maybe he or she was just having a bad day, whoever that creator may be. And I don't know, it's bizarre. Like these public forums that are available for people to communicate with the creators can be really controversial. So it's a question of, you know, should they even participate or should they just keep promoting their own stuff and just keep this facade up that's, you know, just all positivity all the time when we know that people aren't like that, you know, whether they're a creator or not. Like I get on social media, I get on Twitter and just bitch and complain about comics a lot. And whether anyone responds to that, I don't know, it's very rare. Unless it's people on this show, which is funny enough, I get into big conversations with all of you guys, but you know, I don't see random people that follow me getting in on that conversation because maybe they just don't care. So it's, but if I was a, you know, a creator or someone of like notoriety, someone of note, someone of importance in some way, maybe more people would jump in and try to like have an opinion on something that I'm talking about. But I don't think you'll actually see creators or people of note spouting any sort of negativity that could be controversial or would spark a serious longer form conversation. And they usually will probably leave that to, say, email or a secret account, which is a whole nother area of discussion. I don't know, do you guys feel the same way, or am I just going apeshit about this?
I don't know if I disagree with you, but I mean this is sort of a secondary, but like especially with the account, like the accounts of creators and stuff, they're just always happy-go-lucky, always on, essentially. I wish that they would just not be always on, you know? Like, I kind of want them to go on a negative rant of some sort. Not to jeopardize them in any way, but, like, just to... Like, there's just this weird dynamic of, like, oh, they are human, but they're not because they're creators and we read their stuff. And, like, there's just, like, this teeter-totter of, like, are they like us or are they above us? Are they like us or are they above us? And
they sort of have to...
And, like, it's not... I mean... Nobody's ever going to make a line in the sand and tell you, you know, because it's sort of a fluid thing. I get that. But, like, I think that I would have more respect. And this isn't just for comic creator. This is for, like, any content creator, really, is if they're down to earth and they're real on, you know, on their social media presence or any kind of public platform like they are as a person, I think I would feel more comfortable, you know, with them, and I wouldn't have to feel like I have to sort of decipher this kind of crap like I do with, you know, and like politics is sort of the one I'm going to go to, is because, you know, the minute you say anything negative or remotely negative, unless you're Donald Trump, you know, nothing good is going to come. I mean, I'm not trying to start a war, but like primarily, like every other,
to all of our Donald Trump supporters listeners out there,
yeah. Oh God.
Oh boy. All of you are going
to
be pissed.
We don't need to get into that. But continue, Jeff.
But my point is that like politicians have to always be on. They have to always be, you know, this figurehead of positivity, and we're going to make things right, or we're going to do things better. And you know, public figures in other mediums have sort of been following suit, not necessarily directly, but like they sort of do that same kind of thing where they're always being positive and everything. And, you know, they don't want to get negative. They don't want to say anything bad because they're afraid that they're going to show up on TMZ or they're going to show up on some blog that's going to blow up or whatever.
Right.
And they just don't want to have to worry about that kind of thing. And honestly, like, who cares? Like, and it's easy for me to say who cares because I don't read the tabloids or any of that kind of crap. I don't care about that kind of stuff. But like some people do, and I get that. And but at the same time, like I just sort of wish that there, you know, maybe there was it would just be easier for creators to sort of be real and who they are. And if they're having a bad day and they want to go on and rant about it or whatever, let them. And don't chastise them for being human, because we all have bad days. And sometimes venting it out to in a public way is, you know, just a way for them to do it. Like, like you said, Mike, you go on Twitter and you bitch about things once in a while. Let a creator bitch about things and don't make it a fucking story, you know? Like, I mean, that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like there are creators out there who honestly don't feel like they have to put on a public face. And I think really the line there is between up-and-comers who really Twitter may or may not be where their, like, upswell of support is and it could make or break them, or if they're, like, trying to push through a Kickstarter of their first big project. I think with those people, there is sort of a genuine concern. But on the flip side, I think there are people who have quote-unquote sort of made it, And for them, their Twitter is effectively much more of a combination of personal stuff as well as like repping or plugging stuff. And for people like that, it is really interesting to see what their personal life is like. And they're not, you know, withholding information, because like if you're like Gail Simone and you're juggling four or five or six books at a time, I think people, you know, want to know how you do that. I personally want to know how she has any time for Twitter on top of her books, let alone as active a Twitter aficionado as she is. I think that's crazy. I don't know how she does it. That part just absolutely just baffles me. But on top of that, she's not afraid to you know, deal with controversy. People have written in and said, you know, well, I wish you wouldn't focus on, what was it? I think someone said, like, her social justice issues were, you know, they're like, your book is good, but I wish you wouldn't do this anymore. Or I think at one point someone made some sort of, I think, transphobic remarks or something like that. And she's like, well, you know, you don't have to read my stuff. And of course, she has the luxury of saying that. I think she has an ardent fan base and, you know, whatever. And more props to her for not having to put up with that stuff. On the flip side, for me at least, if I was having to deal with people like that all the time, it would be this sort of the question of why engage in social media at all? But that's just this modern day and age where we just have a fascination with, you know, if you're up at 3 a.m. in the morning, you know, burning the midnight oil to, you know, meet some sort of deadline for a book, there are people who want to know what's going on. They want to know that that's happening. They want to see early preview pages. And I mean, that's a whole nother issue right there. Like if you're on Twitter, you better know which of the people you follow are more likely to like give you sneak peeks or things like that, because some of those people are much more freewheeling than others.
Right. And it's again, it kind of comes back to this idea of like there's a social contract in a way where you expect these things, but you don't want to say you have to do them, but you're like, I actually want to be involved in this.
Implied.
But yeah, it's a weird implication, and it kind of begs the question, like, I there is no question. Actually, I'm kind of just, like, confused by it, because the level of participation varies from creator to creator, and yet we want as much as we possibly can get. We want our questions answered, and then when we don't get them answered, you know, is Batman coming back at number 50? You may send to Scott Snyder, and he'll go, well, we'll see. And everyone goes, boo you, Scott Snyder. I don't actually think that happens. But, you know, if we don't get the answer that we want, then we get all pissed off. But if we do get the answer, then is the comic book is valued? It's a weird balance. And I realize this is the most vague, weird question out there or topic for us to discuss on the show. But I still think I see it all the time where creators are, you know, either they're super positive or they're putting up a front. And to go back to what I said before, you know, I know I've seen this from a handful of lower, like, I guess, like, not lower. That's a bad way to phrase it. Less
smaller.
Yeah. Smaller creators. Yeah,
less established.
Yeah. Less established, less note, like less popular creators or like prolific creators, like they'll
on
say
the rise.
They'll say that, you know, that they have secret accounts or that they talk to people about the quote unquote real stuff on accounts that they aren't necessarily related to publicly, and that's like a shame that, you know, we can't actually talk about problems in comic books in a public way. You know, like there was, you know, for a while there was like nonstop articles all last year about basically breaking open all of these secrets about, you know, different creators and how like shitty they were, you know, years ago, or finally being able to discuss, you know, things that had happened that have been kept under lock and key for a long time, simply because no one felt safe saying them. And now I think I don't think we're there yet, but we are getting closer to having that be okay. Like if you're going to do something bad to someone in the comics industry, you have to understand that everyone's going to know about it. So it's this public shaming thing, and social media has been great for that, but it's also been awful for that, where people want to complain about problems, but they won't directly talk about them until like an established article that comes out where they can feel protected, when it's like, why can't we just do that in the first place? But I guess, you know, using an article is probably a little bit stronger than saying tweeting about something on the internet where there's no way to actually establish any or verify that anything happened. You know, you can complain about something, but you actually have to be able to back it up. So I don't know. Maybe I'm putting this implication on people too, saying like, you should be able to say this to people because I want to know about it, but there's no way to actually verify anything. So I don't know. Maybe this is all just a moot point. I'm getting like, I'm backpedaling so bad on this topic right now. I'm sorry.
Well, I think in a way there's this understood, unspoken idea that, like, Twitter is this... I mean, we say Twitter. I mean, you can say whatever you want, but there's this notion that there's a great democracy there, right? There aren't, like, different levels of paid accounts or things like that. Like, we're all just usernames, and we're all just out there, and everyone is on, like, an equal level, and because of that, there's sort of this expectation that stems from that just because, you know, Gail Simone is talking with Dan Slott means that you ought to get the same sort of attention, or you ought to get the same sort of response, or whatnot. And I think that that's sort of a faulty idea, or at least it's stupid that people should expect that. But on the flip side of that, it's the argument that, guess what, you're in a public forum, and the cynic in me would say, well, I mean, you agreed to be there, and if you don't want to be there, then don't. And then that just boils down back to that whole question of, do you have to be on social media to make it in this industry? Do you have to? Is it even a choice? And I think that's a fascinating question, because obviously there are people out there, I don't know, Palmiotti would be a good example. I think Snyder, maybe to some extent, he sort of made it before a lot of this stuff got ushered in. I mean, we're talking like 08, 09, Gates of Gotham, and whatnot. And so there are people that predate this, but it does beg the question, can you actually make it in comics books, those are my favorites,
yeah.
these days, and just circumvent the whole social media thing?
Well, if you're Brian K. Vaughan, you can, but I think he made his way. Like, I think, are you saying, like, if you're an up-and-comer, you mean?
Yeah, like say, like, you wanted to break in now. Like, do you even have a choice, or do you absolutely have to? And, yeah. And
from my understanding, I mean, from everything that you'll hear at comic book conventions, and you hear from, like, editors at the big two, or even, you know, even from Image, or, you know, anyone that has broken into the industry, they'll say, you know, I put my work online, I made sure that I made stuff, and I put it online so that people could see it, and because of that, I was able to make it. And that's why you'll see, I think, web comics that'll become actual, not actual comics, because web comics are actual comics, but
it's... Or people that start doing web comics and then make the transition.
Yeah, and they move from making a web comic to a comic book, and it's all because they got that start. They built up a fan base. They were able to, you know, put their stuff out there for free without having to worry about publishing and getting accepted. And it also allowed, you know, them to work and have a direct interaction with their fans to say, you know, what works, what doesn't work. Or, I mean, and that is to say, if they're even taking that type of criticism, but, you know, if people respond negatively, maybe you know, readjust the way your comic is, or you start a new comic and you say, I won't make the mistakes, or, you know, I won't fall into the same pitfalls as my previous book. And it's a lot quicker turnaround, whereas in print, you know, we have this, it's what we talked about earlier, I'm going to see a book through the arc, or I'm going to wait for the trade. And that's such a weird thing, because it's like putting faith in the idea that a book's going to sell and it's going to continue. And if you're, you know, willing to just put up for six the issues, rather than, like, if you're reading a webcomic, you could say this particular issue that came out this week and it's a weekly book didn't really sell it, and you're, like, over and done with. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that the turnover rate is much quicker, and you get, like, direct feedback. And then if you do make the transition to, you know, comic books or print books, that interaction is still there. So maybe the expectations of fans from webcomic creators that moved into, you know, print books, that they just expect that level of personable,
that you've, like, already had that sort of grooming, and and you've already had to build your own fan base and everything. Yeah,
so it's
I think that's true.
It's interesting, and we are now in an age where more and more books are being published digitally, and I think that interaction is still there, and people expect more and more of it now that it's like, if you have a social media account, and you, even if you started with print and you have a social media account, people maybe expect you to talk to them. And so it circles back to what we've been saying since the beginning. There's just this contract that we can't seem to break. I'm just baffled by it. I don't know if there's an actual answer, or if there's even a problem there, but it just kind of, like, vexes me.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that really I read about, that I see in these interactions with creators and whatnot, is there's such a instant knee-jerk reaction to, like, issues. It's not like you You know, you're like, well, I didn't like this issue. Maybe I'll read a couple more. I mean, we're talking like the olden days, and then maybe I'll write a letter to the editor or something like that of the, of, you know, maybe I'll let Stan Lee know, give him my 2 cents or whatever. Yeah, but now it's like, if you read the issue and it doesn't make you happy, you've just got this direct line to just go at, you know, at Gail Simone, just finished the issue, did not like it, will not continue. And that's just crazy. I mean, sure, that's democracy at work, I suppose. But I mean, maybe I need to go back to, you know, using my fountain pen and my telegraph machine. But it's like, people just, it's like, let things finish their arc. Or like, I was just thinking today, I was reading Southern Cross by Becky Cloonan, and at the end of the first issue, yeah, I had some questions. Yeah, there was some unresolved issues, but the book is a fucking mystery.
Yeah,
that's supposed to be the way it is. And with Twitter, you know, it's just like, at so-and-so, did not understand your book. You know, please work on making your number one issues super accessible. Please hold my hand the whole way through. Yeah. And at the end, please give me the cliff notes in case I didn't get everything so I can go over to my friends and explain the symbolism and sound really, really smart. Like, I mean, maybe Twitter needs a function where when you hit send, it goes, all right, beginning the countdown of 3 minutes so you can dwell on this before your idiotic words go into space forever.
Nick is putting his doctor on the internet, and I'm sure people are already
combing my Twitter feed and going, gee, Nick, I bet you wish you had a couple of those.
Well, the problem is that whenever somebody tweets that kind of crap, they think that they're doing social justice or that what they're saying matters and everything. And like, yeah, you've got a voice. You can use it as much as you want. You can yell from the mountaintops that you hated the last issue of Wicked and Divine or whatever. But like, it doesn't mean everybody has to hear it. It doesn't mean that kind of thing. And then, I mean, I'm kind of circling back because there was a point I wanted to make earlier was that, Mike, when you were talking about do creators have to sort of make a social media account in order to make it? And I think the answer would have to be emphatically yes. The reason I say this is because, you know, somebody like Brian K. Vaughan, when he launched Panel Syndicate and launched Private Eye, he basically started using Twitter from that point on. Like he has a pinned tweet of like I, you know, I made a comic about how social media was destroying the future, so I joined social media to tell you. Like, if that's not the perfect simile or metaphor, whatever you want to use, to sort of like explain this conversation, in my opinion, I think that would probably be it.
Don't let social media destroy the future. Be nice to each other online. If you want to be nice to us online, you can email the show at cyborg@destroythecybe.org. You can also be nice to us on Twitter @destroythecybe and on Tumblr @destroythecyborg. You can even be nice to us on Reddit @ireadcomicbooks.reddit.com. Our host and producer is Mike Rappin, and the show is edited by myself, Xander Riggs. This week's music was brought to you by Siru and Infinity Shred. You can find Siru on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/Siru and at Siru.ch. You can find more of the wonderful Infinity Shred on Bandcamp at infinityshred.bandcamp.com and at infinityshred.com. A warm welcome to our new listeners who have joined us over the past few weeks. If you like the show, tell someone about it. Rate us online, or write to us. We'd love to hear your thoughts on what you're reading, and we hope comics are good to you.
Okay, I'm going to do this since Kelly is gone and she can't tell me not to do it. I have to buy this Kylo Ren figure right now.
Figure?
I still haven't seen Star Wars.
God fucking damn it. Are you kidding me, Jeff? You can't be on this podcast because I'm going to... Okay.
I know. Kay. I failed.
Okay. Okay.
Has someone at least ruined it for you to the point that maybe you don't care? Or have you actually somehow made it?
I mean, we're not even going to be talking about Star Wars tonight, but...
I'm just curious. Has he made it this far? Has someone ruined it for you yet?
Kind of.
Okay, let's not.
I mean, don't say anything. I'm just going to tell you what I saw. I don't want any reaction from this, but
I don't know. I feel like we shouldn't say anything past this, because I feel like if we say or don't say anything, it's going to start to color.
No,
so I think we'll...
What I'm telling you to do is
let
to
it be literally... known. Nick White tried to pump the brakes. Okay, it is on yeah. record. Nick yeah. White tried to actually stop this. Go what, ahead,
what
Jeff.
What I'm saying. What I said, and after I say this, I want to go straight into the to a totally different topic. But what I saw was a Kylo Ren figure, like lightsaber, stabbed through a Solo cup. So I have inclinations that somebody very important to my heart dies, but I don't know. Anyway, let's go to the podcast now.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to talk about something else. Oh, okay. I have three okay. First off, let me just say I hate those Funko Pop fucking action figures, but I am about to buy three of them.
Oh my god.
Why?
So, cuz I really love the Kylo Ren one. And I'm like, if I'm going to get Kylo Ren, then I got to get Poe. Or I got to get Rey. And if I'm going to get Rey, I got to get Darth Vader so I can do that whole cutesy bullshit. Like,
he looks like the dude from Spaceballs.
Jeff, you watch that movie and you don't fall in love with Adam Driver and you come back and talk to me after that, all right?
I don't care how he is as an actor. The fucking figurine looks like Spaceballs.
Does he have the mask? Darth Vader one does.
I'm probably not going to buy that one. He has the mask. I really just want this. I really love, I don't know, Kylo Ren. He, for some reason, like, stole my fucking heart. And I really want to buy this.
Adam Driver is a fucking saint, and he's a perfect human being.
I love him. He's great. So, I have one of these in my cart on Amazon, and it's only $10, and I kind of want to buy it. I'm going to sit on it for, there's only three left, though. That's the problem. So, there's only three left.
Poor Jordan has been trying to hunt down. I mean, I'm sure you assumed this. Some of those things are notoriously obscure and really mm-hmm. hard to find. And he's trying to mm-hmm. get. Have you ever heard of this like Japanese band where it's these like younger girls that like
baby
sing
metal
music? Yeah, yeah. Okay, you metal? Know what it is. I don't need to yeah. dance around or qualify it any more than that. Exactly. He's yeah. trying to find a baby metal one for a friend of his.
I didn't even know that. I mean, okay, Funko Pop pretty much makes those. I'm buying this thing. I don't care. I'm shipping it to work. It's going to happen.
Okay.
Yep, sorry guys. I know that you're all disappointed in me. Xander, this is, you know, you have proof now, but get it February 19. Oh my. Or I could pay $13 for shipping and wow.
$13.
That's more than yeah, the figurine.
God. Yeah, that's the figurine is $10.
Yeah.
Anyways, okay. Sorry. There's that's a, how they he's get looking you. For a baby metal one?
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I'd never done this before, but I went to the Funko Pop website to just see if you can order them there, and granted, I didn't spend a lot of time with it, but it looks like they don't have, like, an actual purchasing place, which yeah, I think is just artificial scarcity that they're imposing.
Yeah. All right, this is happening. I'm buying this right now. I know that I shouldn't, but I... Too late. I hit the button. My order has been placed.
There you go.
I needed this in my life, okay? That's... Stop judging
Do you feel
me.
Fulfilled,
all.
Mike? Do you
yeah,
feel
I was gonna say, are
I'm
going
to be
gonna
so
use
excited because he's going to sit next to my little BB-8 that I have on my desk. I have a BB-8 because I do love BB-8.
Jeff probably doesn't even know who that is. Just kidding. I'm sure you
He's a little robot. Okay.
You don't live under a rock.
So. Is it like a BB gun?
Yep, God damn it, Jeff, you're off this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I knew there were going to be jokes on this thing, but...
The bar's really low, guys.
I know.